Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Something Japanese, a word or something that you've learned.
Sumasen. Sumasen is pay attention and get to work, basically. It's excuse me, but they all liven up.
GB likes that phrase. Because that he likes people to react in his presence. As I'm far more deferential. So I'm saying
exactly.
I'm consistently saying arigato, which means thank you.
And pouring me drinks.
Yes, of course.
Right. Well, let's get straight into the podcast then. So where are you right now, firstly? Because I can tell you, I'm in Manchester, looking out at horrendous biblical levels of rain, which I was delighted about because it meant that mini rugby at Broughton Park was cancelled this morning, so I got to just sit at home and watch the entire Wales.
Well, rather than,
where are you?
Rather than us tell you, why don't you guess? I mean, where would you go if there was a World Cup on in Japan with many, many of the great Japanese cities hosting games? Where would you go, Tim?
I'd be probably at a fan village, because they've done some really amazing work sorting out fan zones. Or I would be at like an Irish, a generic Irish bar in Tokyo or Osaka. Where are you?
Well, obviously we're in Okinawa, which is a 2-hour plane ride away from Japan. I'm sat in my bedroom now. Phil is sat in his room, and we're all doing this just so we can record egg chases. Admittedly, we didn't fly to Okinawa so we could record egg chasers, but that's where we are. And I'm currently enjoying a Raikou lemon sour, which allegedly is like a beer, but it didn't taste very beery.
Sounds quite Negroni-ish.
It's certainly not Negroni-ish.
And I'm just about to open a can of Godo Strong 9%, and there's some generic citrus fruits on it, and a lot of writing.
Is that Japan's answer to Tennent's Super?
Well, it's interesting. We don't really know, because it depends sort of what percentage you look at. It clearly says 8%, but down the bottom it says 5% alcohol. So I don't know what was 8%. 8% the amount of lemons in it? I've got no idea. But it's I'm basically drinking White Lightning.
8% of dentists recommend it. No idea.
So,
go on.
So we unfortunately had some bad planning on this leg of our journey, which meant that we've just flown from Osaka to Okinawa, and the wheels touched down on the runway at half time during what I have seen looks like an incredible game, but we've not actually seen a single second of it other than reading about it online. Can you talk us through some of the highs and lows?
Well, firstly, admittedly, you're not only there for the rugby, you're there for the whole experience of the fine nation of Japan. However, when you look at the first month of the tournament, when you look at the pool stages, is there a, like South Africa, New Zealand, obviously on the opening weekend, but actually other than that, is this one of the biggest game of the middle period of the pools, with maybe England, France being the one towards the end? This is one where you build your plans around a game like this.
Well, I would say if you think about rugby in normal terms, you probably might do that. But the real experts The real people in the notion upon their day around going to watch Japan beat Ireland.
Yes.
Well, this is that was the most competitive.
Absolutely true. I want to we'll get onto Wales Australia in a minute, but actually you just brought that up. You're in Japan. What was it like being in Japan and witnessing the whole social reaction to that win?
I mean they were devastated. The people everywhere were a little bit embarrassed, I think. They didn't expect it to happen. There were tears, but people were very, very upset over here. That said, I was in an Irish bar. Well, the Japanese, on the other hand, were absolutely delighted. And actually, most of the people in the bar were also absolutely delighted. It was phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, the atmosphere in the bar, which there was... So I think everyone who wasn't Irish in the bar, regardless of where they were from, were supporting Japan.
Of course.
So there were a few cheers for the Irish tries, and then the whole bar went nuts every time Japan. And it was an increasing like excitement throughout the game, where it became more and more realistic and likely that they were actually going to do it. And at the end of the game, there was people hugging, people high-fiving, people screeching and squealing with excitement. It was amazing, amazing atmosphere. And then everywhere last night, pretty much everywhere we went, was showing highlights of the games. They were showing it in restaurants and pubs.
Oh, that's amazing. Everywhere. That's great. I was going to say, it's a nation of what? What is it, 50 million people? And
no, 130.
Much more than that.
130?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
It's about double size of the UK. I think it's double the size of the UK. Yeah, the population.
Well, so when you think, oh wow, because when you think about the impact that this result on home turf can have, prime time at a weekend.
Yeah,
that is, for rugby. That is massive.
Yeah. So there's a guy who you might have heard of, and I give him a lot of stick, Eddie Jones. But actually, his impact over there, obviously, he's already coached Japan, but the fact that he can speak it, and admittedly, he's very apologetic for his Japanese. But, you know, he is a genuine household name. Like, the messaging over here, the tournament, the way everyone's bought into it, it's an absolute phenomenal job by World Rugby.
Yeah, it really is. It's superb. Did either of you see Jamie Joseph's press conference, where he was talking about the preparation of the game for Japan compared to Ireland?
Yes, so the phrase he used, he said, we've been planning for this game for a year, possibly three, and Ireland have been planning for it since Monday.
Yes.
Yeah, he's absolutely right though, isn't he?
Yeah. And it shows the level of detailed preparation that they've done and just how much it means to get... This scalp means so much to that Japan team and the people.
But the thing is, it's one thing to plan for. I mean, you know, I could plan to be Ireland with Tok H over the next 10 years and we would still never do it. It's another thing altogether to actually pull it off. And, you know, rugby's a very sort of binary sport, which is power, 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 more power, more power. And it's just amazing to see not only that they did it, but how they went about doing it.
Yeah, loved it. I mean, absolutely loved it.
Shota Hori is one of my new favourite players.
Mm.
The hooker, Jimeno is just—he's in with a shout for team of the tournament in the back row.
Yeah,
Michael Leach, the way he responded to being put on the bench and then come on and play 50 minutes. Oh my word, that man is a hero.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed either. I was watching it with a crowd of people. I really enjoyed holding court and telling them about why Maffey no longer plays for Bath.
Allegedly, doesn't he no longer play for Bath in there?
We've not said anything on the podcast as such, but yeah, allegedly why he doesn't play for Bath. That was good fun. When he went down, though, I really felt that they might struggle because he was playing really well. He's a big game line presence, a very, very good player.
He was. The one thing I thought about Japan most of all is watching them. It was like old school rugby and also the future of rugby.
Okay.
Because it wasn't about huge men smashing contact. It was about just it was just really unbelievable basic skills as the foundation to everything they did. And
it's
so
amazing.
So, and it sort of reminded me at times some of the running angles they would do and some of the little lifts just before contact. That reminded me of rugby 20, 30 years ago. And also it feels like it could well be where rugby, the direction rugby could go. And if it does go that way, well, I just hope it does. I hope it's the future of rugby as well.
Well, I don't think it is. Okay, so the way I look at this is it was a great result. But, you know, you replay the game, what, 10 times? Do Japan win 5 of them? I'm not sure they do. So, yeah, you can pull it off and it's great when it happens. But international rugby is about winning games consistently. And it's just a much lower risk way to play how Ireland do. And that's what Ireland have done, effectively. They've stripped their game down. They play a foundation of very low risk power rugby. And that's basically what wins you most of your games. And the other stuff is nice to have. But first and foremost, it's about power.
But you've got to have the ability to do something different. If the power's not working, which...
Yeah, like England.
An Ireland, the power wasn't working. And South Africa. So you've got three teams there who have tried that ultimate power game and at times been found wanting when it's not been working and they've got to flip, they've got to turn the switch to something else. And Japan have got that option. Japan can do both. And I think you have to. So the All Blacks have that in their repertoire. And to be the best in the world, you've got to be able to switch the way that you play.
Yeah. Just on the Ireland performance, I thought it was very strange that they found a tactic which worked wonderfully. Jack Carty was kicking over the heads of the wingers. Yeah, putting them in pressure. It looked like in fact, it worked an absolute treat. They go up two tries and they gas about it.
Yeah.
It was
very bizarre stuff.
What that now puts Japan to number 8 in the world rankings, above Scotland, who, and the only reason I mentioned that, because it's irrelevant, because we were in a World Cup, but Scotland have never beaten a higher ranked team in a World Cup.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It was a bad result for Ireland. It is a monumental nightmare for Scotland.
Just one thing, because I don't know whether it was something that people were talking about in the bar, particularly if you were in amongst a bunch of Irish fans, but what did you think of Joey Carberry kicking the ball out of the end? Because he's got absolutely hammered online.
So, I assumed he just didn't know the time. Now, weirdly, I asked a certain Premiership fly-off about this.
How is AJ?
Carberry. and he was saying like, well, there's always a clock at both ends so the fly half can sit, and you're always worth the time. Now that was not in relation to this. I've got to say, this was like a few months ago. I thought it was just an interesting point to see how professionals try and manage the clock. So although maybe he didn't see the time, it's almost incomprehensible. If you're an international player, you'd know where the clock is. You'd know. I mean, that's your job to know exactly what you're doing.
So I guess my point was, were the Irish fans going, what are you doing?
Everyone said, what are you doing? Everyone was frustrated. And it's a really weird one for me. Because if his decision was just to get the ball off the field, we'll take the losing bonus point rather than risk losing out on it, then you kick directly backwards or you kick to the side. He deliberately went for distance, which kind of discredits the theory that he knew exactly what he was doing. Because he only just made touch. He made touch around the halfway line, but the ball only just went out. So it doesn't ring true to me.
Why would you risk it?
Yeah.
I know,
if your objective is finish the game.
I think
it's him just dropping the ball. Just as in figuratively, just not checking the clock and thinking he's got time when he actually doesn't.
Oh, poor guy.
I wouldn't go. I don't disagree on that it was in Carberry's case, it might have been more by luck than judgment, but I think it was the right decision, which is my general overriding point, which I think a lot of people seem to have missed. It's like Ireland had to go 100 metres to maybe get, even if they scored a try, they then have to convert it as well to maybe get one extra point. But having the 1 point in the bag at that point, in this pool, any three of those teams can still get knocked out. It's, yeah, but with that 1 point they picked up, it's much, much less likely to be Ireland.
So I agree was the right decision.
Yeah, so I suspect. Well, hell, before I go into that, if you just offered that to Joe Smith and said, "Look, I'm not going to tell you the result, but you get the bonus point. Do you want it?" I wonder what he would have said.
Well, I mean, for one thing, he looked absolutely furious, and obviously he wants to win a World Cup with Ireland. He's the world number one ranked team, and that's a huge dent. But secondly, that is a advantage Gatland for the New Zealand job, isn't it? Or advantage Jamie Joseph.
Yeah.
The more I think about this Jamie Joseph thing, like just the more amazing it becomes. Do you think of it as a superior victory than the one against South Africa?
It wasn't a great South Africa team, was it? But it was still a very good South Africa team 4 years ago.
And that was completely by surprise. I sort of think because they've already done it once, Ireland would not have gone into there thinking that they could, thinking like South Africa did.
Yeah.
And just coming in a bit complacent.
Yeah.
They'd be more prepared for it.
Schmidt specifically said that. He said, he got asked the question, do you think, were you surprised at how good, how competitive Japan were? And he explicitly said, no, not at all. We've not underestimated Japan. We knew they were going to be very physical. We knew they've got the skill out wide. We knew they can control the game. And Tamura is a great composed fly half. We knew all that, but we didn't answer the questions on the day.
Yeah. What a nightmare for them.
Very brief interlude. Because I have not been to Japan. I would love to go. I intend to go at some point.
But you wouldn't enjoy it, mate. You wouldn't enjoy it.
No. What are the Japanese like on a night out?
They're okay. I tell you what, Osaka is just a weird place. Everything, all the bars are really, really small. So far, maybe someone can correct me, we've not been to any like higher end sort of areas. It's kind of lots of dingy little drinking holes. But that just could have been the area. But same in Kobe too. I quite like the traditional Japanese drinking places. They're quite good fun. But yeah, they're into it. Put it mildly.
Cool. Do they like a beer, or do they just go for shots? Do they go out late? Do they go? I don't know. What's the sort of culture?
So I'll tell you what we saw yesterday. So we went to a traditional Japanese restaurant, quite small. Jay wasn't with us. Jay was watching or trying to watch the Liverpool game at the time with some of our friends.
No, South Africa game.
Oh yeah, and there was that as well.
Has been a professional film.
But sorry, there were ten. We had 10 courses, a 10-course set menu,
oh, wow,
which was mostly awful. So mostly there was quite a bit of intestine in there. It was kind of, it ranged from the delicious to the disgusting, the food. But when we ordered, so we didn't know this at the time, but we ordered, and the waiter comes over and he's got a little pocket translator thing, a little dictaphone translator, and he speaks into it for about 5 seconds and then plays it back to us, and it said, "The set menu you have chosen includes unlimited free drinks. 90 minutes, your time starts now." And so we had...
So this was
a traditional meal, and there was two young girls on the table, Japanese girls, mid-20s, on the table next to us, who were doing the same thing. And they put away... So we were drinking Jim Beam highballs, which seems to be a common drink in Japan. So Jim Beam and ginger, which is... It's a lovely drink, not quite any Negroni, but
no.
They put these two girls put away, I don't know, 10, 12 of them in the 90 minutes that we were there. They drank way more than us.
So the other thing that we experienced is we ordered a round of non-alcoholic beers. Okay, sounds like a disaster, but listen to this: you add your own alcohol. What is that all about? So you get like basically a whole pint glass of spirits, you pour your non-alcoholic beer, and then you add your spirit to the beer.
Yeah. We've had that in a couple of places now.
Wow. Yeah.
And so another interesting one for you, and no one wants to hear any more that much more about Japan. But first night in, we spent a small... We basically spent about the same amount of money as a small nation's GDP on Kobe beef.
Oh, and, yes.
We both independently, me and Phil, as we were washing down this... It tastes like meat, which has somehow been infused with butter. And we both independently said to each other, Tim would hate this.
That Kobe beef was sensational. Was unreal.
And the prawns that they cooked us were literally alive when they hit the hot plate.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I'll ever eat a dead prawn ever again.
Amazing. Amazing. Right. Well, I'll tell you what was incredible as well was the game that you missed. So JB, like a Welshman. Do you know what, actually, now I think about it, I was so tense watching this game, and I am...
It's horrible, isn't it?
I am just wired as an Englishman to have a general dislike on the sporting arena for both of these nations more than most other nations. So for me to be that tense watching the game, I cannot imagine how you would have been watching it.
Well, I'm going to rewatch it tomorrow and we'll dial in again and just give you a reaction. But I can tell you, just by looking at my phone, it felt nervy just watching those scores update and Australia slowly creep back into it. But let's not make any bones about this. This is an enormous result for Wales. They've beaten Southern Hemisphere teams before, never in the World Cup.
Yeah.
So Wales, going on the back of this, they beat them last time round, didn't they? Last November. But before that, they were on a run of 11 or 12 consecutive losses.
They couldn't put Australia away. I think Australia had 13 men last World Cup, and they couldn't do it then. You know, so this is, don't underestimate how massive this is. So it's encouraging. Let's put it that way. Let's not get carried away with it.
I want you to, so before we actually get into the actual game, I want you to hear Michael Checker after the game, because, well, he was not best pleased. Hold on. Come on.
We appreciate that. Thank you for your words, Al. Just give us an insight as to what went wrong in that game.
Well, I'm just going to flick to 4G on my phone because I don't know what is going on with my internet. I think it's the weather. Hold on.
Well, whilst you flick to that 4G, I just want to ask Phil, are you now on the Asahi can which has got a pineapple on it?
No. No, you got four different cans. I've got I got a Habu Ball Energy Highball 6%.
Hang on, I've got an energy one somewhere. Or have I?
And I've got a Godo Strong 9% that tastes like a grapefruit. It might be, is it yuzu, yuku?
Oh,
Phil, just an observation. Your voice is in better shape than JB's at the minute, so well done.
I do a lot more talking.
Jay did a lot of shouting in the Irish bar when Japan were winning yesterday. He ruffled a few feathers yesterday. And me and Jay were actually doing karaoke together
at
5 a.m. in the centre of a shopping centre this morning.
Which tune?
Which tune we didn't do. We didn't do Gary Puckett, Young Girl. I can believe that
Maybe his favourite karaoke song. We did karaoke. Tim.
I could not invent a funnier rugby song than Young Girl.
Tim, we did as a duet. The two of us did "Ride on Time" by Black Box.
Wow! Wow! Wow!
Yes, we did. That was
unbelievable. That was we really nailed those high notes.
Yeah.
On that bombshell. Go on.
They also didn't have Nickelback, Rockstar.
Yes, they had a limited selection.
Yeah, really disappointing. Especially for them. Anyway, there you go.
Michael Checker.
I really appreciate that. Thank you for your words, Al. Just give us an insight as to what went wrong in that game.
We lost 5 points. I think we Yeah, we just lost by a couple of points here. It was a tight contest. No, that's the way it goes sometimes.
Once again, the substitutes making a massive impact. Does that bode well for the rest of this tournament?
I'm not thinking about the rest of the tournament right now. Just thinking about what happened tonight for the moment, and then I'll think about the rest of the tournament later.
Tournament well and truly not over for you. What positives are you going to take from this game?
Well, mate, any positives we take, we'll keep to ourselves, I think, because we're looking good in the scrum tonight. Got penalised, I'm not sure. Maybe Australia's not allowed to scrum any good. So I'll just keep them myself. So I know you're expecting me to go, so I'll just keep my powder dry and we'll see where we end up.
I quite like the Michael Checker, rather than going off at anything, just said, oh, I'm not going to say anything to them. I'm not going to say anything. He was hurting.
No, you can leave your passive aggressive nonsense, elsewhere. The whole thing was weird then. I mean, who was the interviewer?
That was Rob Vickerman.
Rob Vickerman, our mate Rob.
Right, yeah, because I think I would lose my rag there. I mean, I just don't, he's done very, very well. He's done very well to keep calm, especially when he said, I'll keep it to myself, or we just lost by a couple of points. Losing by a couple of points is not the reason that you lost. It's what happened. The reason that you lost may be all the other elements, inside of the game.
JB, sorry, just on a technical thing, have you moved the phone away from your mouth a little bit? It might just be signal.
No, I'm still exactly where I was before.
It might just be the signal, but you're coming through loud and clear now. So, sorry, just finish the point you were making about Michael Checker.
Yeah, I just think he's been a bit passive-aggressive there, and he's not really, he should answer his questions better.
Rob Vickerman handled that pretty well, as well, I thought.
I'd be pretty angry with him.
Yeah, you've had a few irate DORs that you've had to interview, Tim. How is it when you've got someone who's, who's just giving you nothing, just making a few word statement on things?
I think you just you keep asking you just keep asking questions as Rob did there, because it's that's all you can do. And actually, I think a lot of people will come away thinking what JB did, that what a belligerent passive aggressive.
I kind of get it because he wants to win so much, but sometimes they do lose sight of the whole point of rugby is entertainment, and give the fans something. So yeah, mixed.
In terms of the game, let's just deal with why Michael Checker might have been upset. What an incredible match, first and foremost. So Wales had a 15-point lead at halftime, a lead which no one in a World Cup... It would be the biggest margin to come back from at halftime, I think. And Australia nearly did it. Matt Tamua came on in the second half, and a couple of other guys came on in the second half and really made a difference. And Wales would be delighted they managed to cling on.
Who did Tamua come on for? Was it Foley, or did he come on in the centre? Came on for Foley.
Yeah. So he came on and really injected a bit of pace, and it made a massive difference. And I mean, if I was Australian, I'd be very, very upset. I think 100%.
So I've heard lots about the offside not being reffed and that kind of thing. So where are the contentious points here?
Well, for one, Australia had a dominant scrum, and Wales got the rub of the green on a number of decisions. It didn't make sense. There was a very contentious moment which led to an 8 to 10 point swing. I think it might have even been a 10 point swing in the game, which was massive towards the end of the first half. And there's been a lot made about tackling high, making sure the tackler has his tackle position lower, and that's led to some red cards, not for Piers Francis, but we'll get onto that in a minute. But Rhys Patchell went in. He was on for Dan Bigger, who had taken a knock. Yeah, he went off with an HIA again, purely because his tackle technique was dreadful. Very brave, but it was bad technique, and he came off worse with a concussion. So yeah. Rhys Patchell comes on. Samu Karevi is going through with a powerful run, holding the ball at chest height, like an NFL running back with both arms round the ball.
Yeah. Now I have seen this clip.
Reece Patchell tackles him, which I mean, if Karevi hadn't got his hands up high, Reece Patchell's going off for a red card for a shoulder to the head. Somehow, Luke Pearce, who I think was part of it, and then Romain Poit and a New Zealand TMO who seems to love having a look at very, very minimal issues again and again and again in slow motion. They managed to decide that Karevi had done a forearm smash into Reece Patchell's face. It happens from my perspective.
I'm looking at it.
I've seen the clip.
Crazy.
Do you know that whole clip is sort of what's wrong with rugby at the moment, which is like,
yes,
it's just bad defending by Patchell. That's all it is. Reece Patchell can't defend. Okay, let's move on.
Just watching that, it really reminds me of the Alassana Tuilagi incident at the last World Cup, where he ran in very strong body position and a Japanese player went too low, got his head on the wrong side, and Tuilagi's knee hits the Japanese player in the head. A total accident because the Japanese player got his head in the wrong place. Tuilagi ends up with a 4-week ban.
It's weird, looks the same. And it's bloody difficult because the way the laws are written and the way they want them enforced, you know, the refs have got to take action and the laws are there for good reason. But yeah, we somehow need to come to an accommodation where, you know, that's just a play on, isn't it? There's nothing to really worry about.
Yeah, and a great ref there. And again, I think a ref who'd been an ex-player, and this is what disappointed me because Carl Dixon was on the sideline and he has played the game. I think anyone with real empathy for the game would have said at that point, do you know what? The laws are there to try and affect the behaviour of the tackler. You've gone high there. Unfortunately, that's what happens. Let the boys play. Which is a phrase, by the way, which Matt Gitto actually used. He used the phrase today, let the boys play.
Exactly, as he well should. Obviously I've not seen the game. But I would say, if Manchester is that annoyed about things, and, you know, you've said there's some contentious points here, Tim. I've also heard that they're apparently the opposite side.
Jay, just stop. I'm really struggling. It's going very muffled. Is that the same for you as well, Phil?
Sorry.
There you go. That's better.
Muffled, then.
That's better. Yeah.
Is that better?
Yes.
Much better.
What was I saying? Yeah, apparently Gareth Davis looked like he might have been offside for his intercept. All that stuff. Ultimately, Australia have nearly overhauled a pretty large lead, as you said. That would have been a record. And Wales on to a few weeks ago, they were number one. So yeah, it's not a complete disaster for Australia, is my feeling. But obviously, they'll want to win everything.
And they'll know they're probably, well, hopefully, touch wood, if results go our way, they'll know they're going to play England now in the quarters.
Hang on. Why would they be playing England in the quarters?
It's safe to say that they will be playing the best team in pool.
Yes, let me actually say that.
Whoever is on the best form at the end of the pool stage and from pool C, they will most likely play Australia.
Yeah.
Now, I was lucky enough, actually, to watch Argentina play. And following this, Tim, I think it's safe to say I'm far more confident about England's chances leaving the group than I was a week or so ago.
Well, yeah, 100%. Let me just keep you on this game for just a minute, the Wales Australia. But we'll broaden out because it was Alan Wynne-Jones broke a Welsh record. Of caps.
God, I thought you were going to say a finger or a leg or something.
No, I'm just...
Jesus Christ, Tim.
I'm just saying...
Signpost before you talk, mate.
There were loads of Japanese people in the crowd who were singing the Welsh national anthem. They've learnt it. There was Wainwright is a bloody star in the making.
Yeah, he's a talented boy.
Gatland does it again.
Yeah, again, and Wales showed a lot of bottle. And what I really liked about Wales, very much in the mould of Warren Gatland, is how streetwise they were. They had bad discipline, but they didn't get on the wrong side of the referee. So they know when they've got that thing which good sides have, which New Zealand have always had, where they know when to give away penalties,
when to be naughty.
Yeah, and they're very, very good at knowing when to be naughty, and I love it. And Gareth Davis is having a great World Cup. A lot of people were saying months ago that not having Reece Webb, they should get him back. It's going to be a huge blow. Reece who?
Yeah, well, you know, look, there's still room for two world-class scrum halves. But yeah, Gareth Davis has been playing well for years. I mean, I think he's a brilliant scrum half. He's so funny.
I'm just looking. There's a Rugby World Cup at Rugby World Cup Twitter little video post-match interview with Gareth Davis saying, "So he got man of the match, 9 carries, 112 meters gained, yeah. 3 defenders beaten, 2 clean breaks, 1 try." Which are huge numbers for a scrum half.
He's all right, isn't he?
And even more importantly, he's taken his match shirt off and he's just in a compression vest. Bloody hell, he's in good shape.
Yeah.
He's in superb shape.
And he seems to score important tries, particularly in World Cups. Do you boys remember last World Cup? He scored a try against England.
Nope, don't remember it.
Yeah, I was another good one. So he's an outstanding player.
Mm. He really is. I'll tell you who really impressed me today was Justin Tipperick. Bearing in mind he was up against Pooper, he had an absolutely brilliant game as well. So I called it. You know, when we did our the Betfair.
Oh no! Do you know what my Betfair bet was?
Yeah, it was Wales to win without scoring a try.
Bloody hell.
Was that before the Howley incident?
Yeah, as soon as I get rid of Howley. It's not bloody... Rob told me that there was going to be no tries. I can't believe it.
Well, listen, you can't feel as hurt by... At least you waited... At least it was only in the first few minutes where your bet crumbled. Mine crumbled because I said England by more than 4 or by 40 points or more, and they go and just kick the ball dead in the last minute. I was absolutely livid.
I bet you were. I bet you were. Oh, just for legal reasons, Rob did not tell me that. So I think I want to be explicitly clear. We only endorse responsible gambling here.
I'll be looking forward to seeing your reaction when you when you see the Australia Wales game and or extended highlights of it or whatever. I think you'll be very, very happy. You'll be glad you probably, in a way, didn't see it live, Jay, because you would have been a wreck.
I bet, yeah. Do you want to talk quickly about England?
Yes. What was the experience of going to the game? In fact, just what are the fans like? Who are the fans that you've really enjoyed the most as you've been around? Because I got from a couple of messages. You spent a bit of time with some South Africans yesterday.
Yeah. A great guy. Can I mention his name? No, I won't mention his name just in case. Just classic rugby behaviour, which is, you know, you rock a bit of ball, you start watching the game. 10 minutes in, you say, oh, like, good tackle. And before you know it, good tackle has turned into a 20-minute discussion about scrums. And then before you know it, you're best mates. So that's exactly what happened. So we went out with a guy, Stu, last night. He was tremendous.
Yeah, and all the fans we've met, we've been chatting to loads of fans, mostly South African, Australian, Welsh, Irish, English.
They're all stopping you in the street as you walk past going, JB, Phil?
No, definitely not only, doing that.
Only once has it happened.
But everyone that we've met, everyone's out here and loving being out here because it's such an amazing country and loving the rugby and... It has just been such good fun to watch rugby with people who care enough to travel and spend this much money going to see their team.
It's a lot of money.
It's been brilliant.
Yeah. So England, they've got Argentina next week, right?
Yes.
Yes, next Saturday.
So that's the game that we will be going to.
We are at that game, JB.
So this is the first time that I've really been very, very, I'm going to say very confident, more confident about England. Because did you manage to catch Argentina yesterday, Tim?
Yeah, I did. They were, they got the job done. They got the points, but it might, I mean, but think about how we were after England beat Tonga.
Yeah,
you're exactly right. Exactly right on that point.
I think they did a better job than England against Tonga. It's very, very hard to compare. They just look so full. They look so formulaic. They look like they've got very talented players and they're forcing them into their system. and it doesn't bring the best out of them. Then when they do something amazing, it's through some individual piece of flair. And I wonder if they're just going to be a little bit too constrained and then England are going to batter them.
Jay, you've gone distant again.
Hello?
There you go. Whatever you're doing now, just keep doing that.
Yeah. Yep, we'll do. Yeah, did you catch my bit about... never mind, just that. Just that I'm more confident on England now.
Yeah, it is... For England, it's not... There's people who I've spoken to who are certain, absolutely certain, that England will be fine. And just, I'm not certain. I think it's probable, but yeah, it's not definite. It's definitely not definite. Like, things can happen. There can be incidents. There can be twists. There can be turns. There can just be bad days at the office. And if a few people have bad days at the office, it's a problem.
I'm
nervous. I'm so nervous. I really want to see. So I think the USA game was a better performance. It wasn't a perfect performance, but it was a better performance than the Tonga game. I want to see another better performance. If England put in a better performance against Argentina than they did against USA, and that's not to say they're going to beat them by 40-odd points because Argentina are a much better team. But if they put in a better performance, they should win.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely favourites. The thing which I keep thinking about is the USA game. I don't think they were particularly cohesive. They made a lot of silly errors. Jonathan Joseph was the best player on the park by a country mile, I felt. I think it's more... I don't know, really. I think it's maybe a bit more of a toss than a lot of England fans think. But conversely, I'm a bit more confident on England than I was previously.
You keep disappearing down a well.
Yeah, so you mentioned Jonathan Joseph there in your mumblings. So he was brilliant. I've only watched short highlights back, Tim, and obviously we were at the stadium. But yeah. I'd be interested in getting your perspective because the other guys that stood out for me were the three flankers. So
yes.
Curry, Ludlam, and Wilson when he came on.
Wilson, yeah, 100%. Energy,
Yeah, the energy of those boys. And that's, I think, that having those three guys and then Underhill to throw into that mix, those four guys, who can add that energy, who can add that explosivity, the destructive level of defence, I think that is really, really important. The way they're playing will be key for England.
But watching on the telly, and again, you'll have got a very different perspective at the ground, I was massively impressed by England. I think that was a... Albeit it was against the USA, I think that was a performance that had all other nations, and particularly looking at Wales and Australia's pool, I think it would have. I think it was the sort of performance that Michael Checker and Warren Gatland would have been looking at, going, if we can avoid England in the quarters, if they finish top of the pool, let's make sure even more we want to win this game against Australia. Because I think England looked excellent, really, like the power and the pace. And I mean, he's got a big decision, Eddie Jones, about where to go in the midfield. We put a little Twitter poll up, and 55% of people said they wanted Ford, Farrell, Manu as the starting midfield. Would you go along with the majority of our excellent listeners?
No. Well, the problem is you've got must have players, right? And I think Jonathan Joseph is now a must have player. He's been absolutely brilliant since he's got fit again. But then you've got to have the captain, and you've got to have Manning, and you've got to have Ford. Ford probably misses out, but I think I might be tempted to go Ford, Manu, and then Tuilagi.
But Manu, he's not been playing Manu, so it looks like his first two choices for 12 are Farrell and then Piers Francis.
So JB, you just said Ford, Manu, to and then Tuilagi. Did you mean
Ford,
Manu, Joseph?
Sorry, Ford, Manu, Tuilagi is what I was saying. Then obviously Phil interrupted me, and then Jonathan Joseph.
So JJ is in great form because he was injured for quite a lot last year.
Yeah,
he's come back in superb shape.
The guy's mad. I mean, I forgot how good he was.
I probably would agree with our superb Twitter followers. And I probably would go Ford and Farrell with Tuilagi and then JJ on the bench. And JJ can cover a multitude of positions from the bench.
How are they back?
And don't change things up. And if you've got Manu tenderizing the 13 channel, then you can get a bit more space for JJ when he comes on. So I don't mind that option.
Yeah, because it's a strange one, isn't it, to have to move one of your best players into a different position. So playing Manu, but that's the problem. They're either going to have to move their captain to 12, and he's got a checkered past at 12, I would argue. Or you're going to have to move your best outside centre.
Okay.
Well.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, if you have to move one of your best outside centres or a guy who plays his best rugby at outside centre to 12, you know, that 12 problem. I can't believe after 4 years we're still...
Hello, Jay.
Hello.
Are you doing anything when it?
Hello.
Yeah, hello. Hello. Are you doing anything? Is the phone moving in any way?
Nope.
Okay.
I completely still.
I can guarantee the phone will be moving slightly.
I can guarantee it's not. What was I saying? Right, yeah. So, I can't believe that we're 4 years down the road here and they still have not settled on 12. And, you know, to make it work, you either got to move Manu to 12 like you did against Ireland. I think that's a solid thing. Bente's, disappeared. I don't think Farrell is the answer. He's got a checkered history at 12. It's almost good enough, but it isn't good enough.
let's just ignore that last word. I didn't hear it. Let's ignore it.
I think JJ after 50 minutes when defences are tired could be a little stick of dynamite that Eddie Jones can chuck onto the pitch.
But I tell you what, you're thinking of him going forward, and that's great. I think of him in defence as well, and I actually think I would start him because he makes it so much more solid. Yeah, he's got the spot going forward, but his defence is awesome.
So I do actually agree with that. I think Manu can potentially be a bit of a liability position-wise and decision-making-wise in defence because he wants to put in the massive hit.
Yeah.
And the massive hit is not always the best option.
Well, it's most 99% of the time it is. Regardless of outcome.
Regardless of how high it is or whose head comes off.
It's usually the best option. It is for the viewing public, at least.
Well, listen, while we're...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On England, Trevor Morgan has emailed us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com, with a little England World Cup quiz. Very, very...
Ooh, yes, please.
So JB and Phil, you're in different rooms.
We are.
You can take each other on right now. So what he's done is the quiz is name the three England players in the squad for the following positions in the following World Cups.
Okay.
So, and you get a point for each correct one. You can only have three. You can only have three guesses. I'm gonna trust you to be honourable about it. You're in Japan after all. The nation of, it's all about honour. Yep. So, 1999. England's fullbacks.
1999. Bloody hell. All right. Oh. Oh, God. I've got some wild ones here. So I've got one definite, one maybe. Hello?
Sorry, yeah, I'm here. And then Phil, you feeling all right?
I've got one possible.
Okay.
I'm not sure. 99 is kind of... I do have memories of it, but not in the same details.
No, of course, of course, I get that. So, okay, go on then. Phil, give us one.
Matt Perry.
Matt Perry is mine.
Yes, Matt Perry was one of them. Go on then, JB, what else you got?
Okay, I've just changed. Okay, I've got two more, and I know one of them. Tim Stimson.
Is incorrect.
What? That's an outrage.
We got another one?
I'm going to go with Nick Beal.
Is correct.
Yes. Ooh,
so I would not have got that.
There is one more, Phil. So I'm going to give you, if you wanted to guess, you can just say pass if you're not bothered, but I can give you one more guess.
The only thing would be if anyone else played fullback.
Mike might have got in as well.
But Mike gets a centre, surely.
Do you want to say that, Phil? JB's just giving you one. You could just guess it.
fine. Give me Mike Katz.
Correct. You both have 2 points. 2003, England's three centres.
2003. Okay, one.
Yeah,
oh, easy.
More confident
no problem.
On this.
No problem.
Okay, so I'm sure you can say the two centres, the ones that started in a... Okay. Excluding Mike Katz.
who we've
already had in the last one. The other three.
Right, no more Mike Katz then. Fine.
No more Mike Katz.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't Mike Katz go... Did he go in... No, yeah, go on.
So the two centres in the World Cup final were?
In the World Cup final were Greenwood and Tindall.
Yep.
You got those.
Last one.
Who's the other centre that in that squad?
I've got it. I think.
So I think I've got it as well.
Stuart Abbott.
Stuart Abbott was what I was going
to
say.
Correct. 3 points to the pair of you. It's 5-all. As we move on to 2007 and England's wingers.
Ooh, okay. This gets tricky now because this is a hard squad to remember. It's so forgettable. Even though they made the World Cup final. They were forgettable. I mean, they were a farce.
Well, there's one name I'd hope everyone, every English fan would probably get because it was a painful memory. I can only imagine it wakes the guy up at night still.
Almost scored a try in the corner, but for a TMO intervention.
So and also, yeah, people playing our position and all sorts. It's a weird one, this. All right. So, I think I've got three. Okay?
Okay, go on.
So, I know... I've got two that I'm confident with. One who might be classed as a fullback, but probably or possibly played on the wing. And then one who I'm not certain of, but would have a stab at.
Okay.
So I've got four names in my head.
Yeah, so if we mention a fullback, you've just got to give us another go, because that's not fair.
Yeah. Okay.
So number one is Mark Quato.
Mark Quato, nearly scored in the corner.
Correct. Yeah.
Number two, the guy I'll mention, I'm sure he ran over...
The French
Damien Trai, was it? He ran over him, or scored a try over him in the French semi-final, and that was Lucy.
He's a fullback, I'd guess, though. No, because Jason Robinson was
good. Josh Lucy was on the wing, correct.
But Jason Robinson got injured in, was it the first game or certainly the first round against South Africa, or the pool stages against South Africa, and they were like desperately trying to get him back fit for the,
that's right,
for the knockout stages in the final.
So I'll go the last one then. Oh, I'm going to go with a little bit of a wild one because there is another guy that I could go for, and I think he was there, but I want to show off a bit. Paul Sackey.
So Paul Sackey was the guy I was going to go for, but
Ben Cohen would have been a safer option.
No, Cohen not in that time, and I think because Hugo Monier played in 2009 Lions, but I don't think he was there in the 2007 World.
I think all his time.
So you were going to go with Paul Sackey as well, Phil?
I was going to go for Paul Sackey,
which would have meant, Phil, you got all three correct, and well done, JB. Yeah, you got two of those correct. So Phil is a point up, 9 points.
I got Paul Sackey. I said Paul Sackey.
You didn't get Josh Lucy though.
Oh yeah, that's because I would have said Josh Lucy. He just said it first.
Oh, okay, fine. 3 points.
A draw.
It's tied at 9-all. 2011 now, and England's three scrum halves.
Yeah, I know these.
2011, three scrum halves. 2011. What was the last one? Which one was this?
2015 was the last. New Zealand.
Oh goodness.
Yeah, I actually know this because I looked it up fairly recently. So I do know this definitely.
Also, we'll wait on JB then. What you got?
I'll kick off with Gomisil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gomisil, okay. No, he's incorrect.
Oh,
Gomisil was in the 2003 squad.
Yeah, Gomisil, 2011.
Instead of Austin Healey.
Way too late for Gomisil.
All right, fine. Peter Richards?
Peter Richards, you're saying?
Too late.
Peter Richards was 2007, a scrum half. So no. Have another guess, JB?
I need to just name the three.
Yeah, just name the three, Phil.
The three, I am
Harry
sure.
Harry Ellis.
Three, I'm sure. Harry Ellis had retired by then. The three, I'm sure it was Ben Youngs, Joe Simpson, and Richard Wigglesworth. And Danny Kerr didn't make the squad because it was relatively shortly after there was some kind of drink drive incident thing. So I think it's obviously Simpson, Wigglesworth, Youngs.
Correct. Phil takes an almost unassailable lead as we move into 2015 and Hooker.
Oh, God, I've really
got yeah. I think I know this as well.
I've got two. The third one.
Oh, but did he play? Did he play? Interesting. Right. Okay.
Okay, so you're looking at Youngs?
Yes.
Yeah, I go Youngs. I'd then go Weber.
Weber, correct.
And the third one was, did Hartley play? And
no, he was banned.
Yeah. Yeah. So, was he banned after the...
James Jones.
Was that the cheat? Was that the cheat incident?
Yes.
Calling Wayne Barnes a cheat.
JB, you're correct. It was Jamie George.
Oh, Jamie George was there.
Yeah.
Well, that's a clear three to me, so that's a draw.
Phil won that one by two.
Yes.
Well done, and thank you very much to Trevor Morgan. Appreciate it. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com with any quizzes, questions, thoughts, or anything else. We're at Rugby Podcast as well. So, Scotland. Now, they play against Samoa. Is it tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning.
Our time, my time.
Yeah.
So, where are you going to be? You chilling out in Okinawa for a bit?
We'll watch this in Okinawa. Going to see what's going on. Hopefully try and get down to the beach, maybe do some water sports.
I imagine, JB, you're going to the airbase.
Funnily enough, I've been offered a tour. My good friend Paul Godfrey has tried to organize a tour. But God is compiled episodes, so I suggest that you download that. But unfortunately, I've lost my phone. So maybe some high-ranking US general is trying to get a hold of me now to show me around Okinawa Air Base, and I'm rudely ignoring him. So it's bad times.
It's wasn't it some place where and again this maybe I've just watched Karate Kid and took it very literally, but was it the place where like karate sort of originated?
It's exactly right. Exactly right. It's the home of Mr. Miyagi. Basically.
It is the home of Mr. Miyagi.
So it's the same thing then. Basically, karate was invented by Mr. Miyagi.
Well, I mean, he was one of the world's leading practitioners for a long time.
He was. Give the Miyagi family my regards while you're down there.
I'll show him lots of deference.
There is a bit of me. So this, there's always a slight sinking feeling when, and it was not going to happen for a week or two yet. But when the pool stage is finished and the games are confined to just, you know, 2 days a week.
I know.
I wish this pool stage could go on forever.
I agree.
Just top level rugby union every single day of the week.
Yeah. So we've got no,
and not only that, right?
Yeah, go on.
We can have it during midweek. And we spoke about it before. We can speak about it again. We carry on banging this drum until something happens. There should be not just the World Cup, but the World Plate at the same time. Because not only is it good for nations to play, get exposure, the rugby's bloody brilliant. I was watching Georgia, Uruguay. Who knew the Uruguay were that good? Uruguay look like a very, very good rugby team. These teams should be playing more. And it'd be brilliant.
I do agree. I think it's just the, as we've said before, it's people like Mourad Boujalal and Nigel Ray would just go, you what? No, you're not having, imagine if England or France drop into that. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have to imagine what it would have been like after 2015.
Oh, I mean, I can describe it in great detail what it'd be like if England were to go in the group stage, if that would help.
But you're just not going to have the owners of these clubs saying, yeah, sure,
you can I don't know.
I'm a player for now.
I don't know. I mean, I think if you're going to find, I don't think you'll find a more enthusiastic supporter of rugby union than Nigel Ray. So I don't know. I'd have to ask owners whenever I encounter them. But you know, to me, that's the obvious thing to do. I might even go one step further and incorporate the Women's World Cup at the same time, so you could do nothing but watch rugby all day,
every day.
Yeah.
But then there'd be such a vacuum after that.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be tough.
Imagine if you feel sad after the regular World Cup's over, imagine if you've got that hyper World Cup with everything all the time, all the rugby. Yeah. All the rugby all the time.
Yeah, you're right, actually. That could have a spike in depression amongst rugby fans.
Yeah, absolutely. on the Georgia-Uruguay game, we watched a good chunk of the game before we flew this morning. Something that I can't remember who, I'm not going to be able to give credit to this on Twitter, but I noticed that someone pointed out that Georgia's back row options for this game, in this 23, they had Gorgodza,
yeah.
Gorgadza, and Georgadza. George Gadza. The three of them. Crazy commentator's nightmare.
Google, yeah, that's not easy, is it?
No, few issues. But good result for Georgia. That,
yeah, it is.
This is the Georgia Fiji game is going to be very interesting.
Yeah. I think the Samoa Scotland game is going to be interesting. It really matters to Scotland.
It does, and I do expect that Scotland will bounce back. I think they will see a positive reaction, and you'll see a good Scotland performance. They'll have a platform up front, and I think you'll see the best from Finn from Russell Stewart Hogg, assuming that they have been named in the team. I've not actually checked the Scotland team.
Well, they couldn't have been any worse than last time.
No, they couldn't.
Have we done everything? No, we haven't done everything.
Well, just one quick point that's just come in as we, about 5 minutes before we started this call. Piers Francis has not been found guilty of a red cardable offence, and therefore will not have any suspension.
Well done, Piers Francis. We've missed a huge thing, actually.
I'm assuming there'll be. I just need to know what type of do they have biscuits in Japan that he could have taken to his disciplinary hearing? Was that his secret? Some of those green tea Kit Kats that were a limited edition a while back? Maybe, I don't know.
No, I think they'll be nibbling on a raw octopus or something like that. Before we all pack up and leave, and me and Phil get another beer. Big news which we've not spoken about, or big event we've not spoken about yet. Premiership Cup this weekend. Do you want to watch it?
Oh yeah, I watched lots. I watched lots of it, Jake. I was working.
Were you not working?
Yeah. So I watched up close and personal. It's wonderful. It's a fantastic competition, actually. Two great games, and the world feels right again with Leicester being a bit more Leicester at home. Leicester being strong at Welford Road as they were. They had a fantastic performance. Looked against Exeter, yeah, albeit a very very young. I don't expect, well, maybe one or two of the Exeter players that were involved to be involved come the Premiership opening day, but they look really good. And then Wasps looked very much more like Wasps yesterday against Northampton, winning at Franklin's Gardens against a good Northampton team.
Funny enough, these things do matter, because when I was watching the games yesterday, I bumped into a couple of Leicester Tigers fans, and they were talking about their victory against Exeter in the Prem Cup. But yeah, actually, it is important, particularly for teams like Leicester.
I've just checked the Scotland squad. I'm happy to announce that Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg are both starting. And it looks like the strongest squad that Scotland can put out pretty much.
Easily.
Yeah, they're going with a big bunch of boys. They've gone for some bigger men in the back row, which I think is obviously to combat Samoa and their physicality. So
yeah, and losing Hamish Watson is a real blow for
them. Devastating.
He is not the biggest, but he's such a handful, so abrasive. Love him. But he's out, obviously.
There we go. Right, shall we wrap this up?
Yeah, just one little bit of homework. If you chat to any Japanese or any rugby fans living in Japan who speak good English or whatever, ask them just what their view is on the Sunwolves, because it's been shut down, and it'd be interesting to see what they think about the Sunwolves. And
the thing is, right, we all, yeah, so interestingly about the Sunwolves, everyone keeps talking about, so short-sighted to kill off the Sunwolves. The problem is the Sunwolves probably wouldn't be the best team in the Japanese league, let alone Super Rugby. If you think about it, the Sunwolves are a device in order to extract Japanese money away from the J-League or whatever that they play in. Is that the football league? Top league or whatever it is, right? To support Southern Hemisphere rugby. You know, frankly, if they disappear, yeah, it's a shame. It'd be nice if they were successful, yada, 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 yada. But, Japan has a pretty big league of its own with a fair bit of cash. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Guess so. Right. Go and enjoy your evening. And now we know this works and stuff. What, how long are you in Okinawa for?
Oh, sorry, you missed one of the Premiership Cup results, Tim.
Oh, did I? I didn't notice that I'd missed anything else.
Yeah.
Was that a full strength sales side beating Saracens Academy team?
It was not a full strength sales side. Actually, young Tom Curtis was playing, who is the son of ex captain Dean Schofield.
Wow.
There you go. So yeah, we had one or two young lads in themselves, and don't forget first win at Alliance Park, and also a team that really handed it to Wasps last week.
True, that's very, that's very true. Can't argue with it.
Right,
so you've got a couple of days in Okinawa, and then on to Tokyo.
Two days in Okinawa, then when we fly to Fukuoka for USA versus France on Wednesday, we then fly to Tokyo but travel to Hakone, which is a national park near Mount Fuji, for 2 days of relaxation in the onsen spas.
Yep.
Wow.
And then 5 days in Tokyo to watch England-Argentina and USA-France.
Wow.
No, you would hate it all, Tim.
I know, it sounds third world. Just one thing, as you're going about your business, one thing there hasn't been enough of from, you know, people in the rugby fraternity who are out in Japan working. There hasn't been enough little videos on Twitter of bullet trains. So if you can make sure you get some.
Believe me, as soon as I see one, I'll be taking a picture of a bullet train. I've not seen one yet, but I can hardly describe my excitement of just the thought of seeing one. So, I will be guilty of that, hands down.
I'm going to go and have a sportless, barren little gap of time in the grey skies of Manchester, waiting until I can actually watch a bit of NFL later this evening. But I've got 6 boring hours, so in the meantime, you have a good time, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Phil, I'll see you in the hall about 3 seconds.
Bye.
What's cheers in Japanese?
Oh, I did remember.
We have been saying it, but I can't remember right now.
Hold on. We need to end the podcast with this. It'll take me a second. I've got Google Translate up. Japanese to English.
It begins with a K, I think.
Cheers. Kanpai.
Kanpai.
Yeah, I remember now. It's all flooding back to me. We did lots of Kanpai as well last night.
Kanpai. Have fun, lads.
Kanpai.
Right, bye-bye.
In a bit.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.